Welcome to the Defence Forces podcast, brought to you by the Defence Forces Public Relations Branch.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Irish Defence Forces podcast. My name is Captain Keane Clancy, and today we're going to be chatting to Sergeant Carol Johnston of the Infantry Weapons Wing in the Defence Forces Training Centre about sniping. Welcome to the show, Sarge.
Cheers, sir.
So for a lot of people outside, the kind of idea of a sniper and that kind of, it's one of the kind of sexier things that people want to find out about, or what the story is with it, the kind of equipment that's used and the kind of roles that it fulfills. A lot of people are familiar with the sight of the kind of long-barreled weapon, but they're not really sure, other than actually firing that weapon, what the utility of a sniper is. So over the course of the podcast, I'm just going to ask you a bit about your own background. Then we're going to kind of go in about, maybe we'll talk about the origins of sniping and sniping the Defence Forces. So yourself, at the moment you're serving in the Infantry Weapons Wing in the Corra, in the Defence Forces Training Centre. How long have you been in the Army, or can you give me a bit of your own background?
Yeah, well, I joined the Army on the 7th of March 2005. I completed my recruit training in Gormanston Camp. From there, I was posted to A Company, 2nd Infantry Battalion.
Okay, and that was, at the time, that was in Codrell Barracks?
It was, yeah.
When was your kind of first introduction to sniping, or how did it become something that you were interested in? Was it something you always wanted to do when you had joined the Defence Forces?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the whole, like you said, sniping itself and the sniper has always been that kind of popular image in terms of soldiering and terms of war fighting. The sniper always has a certain attraction to people. You know, it's the mysticism around it as well. A lot of people don't fully understand the skill set and understand what snipers do. For myself, it was something that I've wanted to do for a long time. I mean, like a lot of people, I would have played a lot of games growing up, would have watched a lot of action movies, and the sniper is kind of glamorized and popularized in culture a lot, which it has been for the last 70, 80 years. The sniper has particularly come to the fore as one of the most heavily utilized, I suppose, kind of propaganda tools in terms of promotion of the military and promotion of a high standard of soldier skills.
Having been kind of unqualified, it's just something that's really sort of kind of in your face and something cool, but you might know exactly what the minutiae of it is. Yeah. Like, you mentioned kind of when we were chatting about it, that you did the basic sniper course quite early in your career.
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah. And like, that was unusual at the time? I mean, how did you find the course yourself? Or?
I found the course difficult. My first introduction to sniping in the Army, in my Army career, was my section commander on my 2-3 star course was a corporal from the 2nd Field Artillery Regiment.
And for those outside, the 2-3 star course would be the second part of your basic training, yeah. when you joined the Defence Forces. Mm.
And he was a sniper instructor. And just from talking to him during training, again, it kind of reignited that interest that I would have had as a young boy growing up, watching these movies, seeing these guys on TV. And then I decided pretty much then, in that stage of my recruit training, in that stage of my training, that it would be something that I would pursue in my career. And I was afforded the opportunity to, not too long after I had come back from my first overseas mission, which was Kosovo, from October 2006 to April 2007. Mm. And 3 or 4 months later, then I undertook my basic sniper course in the 2nd Field Artillery Regiment here in McKee Barracks.
Okay, yeah, where we're recording today. Mm-hmm. And like, just give us a bit of a breakdown kind of the course, or the course, how the course kind of runs. I presume, like, obviously there is learning how to use the weapon itself.
Yeah.
And we're going to go into like the type of equipment that the Defence Forces uses for sniping later on in the podcast. But like, what other kind of skills? I mean, I'm sure there's a real jump up in the kind of field craft you're learning, or,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Now, there is. I was lucky enough that my unit conducted a 2-week kind of refresher training before I undertook the course. There was 3 of us that were going for the course, and one of the sniper instructors in the unit, who had kind of mentored me, I suppose, in the time that I had spent in A Company, 2nd Battalion, up until that stage. And he was someone, and still someone to this day, that I look up to. And I learned quite a lot from him, and he had learned that I was interested in pursuing this skill set. So he ran these 2 weeks, which brought us up to a good level of soldiering. And it really is a course that, in order to undertake it and to have the best chance of passing it, you must have attained a high level of soldiering through field craft, which is highly important, but also navigation. navigation skills as a sniper are paramount. So I undertook these 2 weeks, and then the course itself, the basic sniper course, is 7 weeks long. So during that time, there is time spent learning the weapon system. There's a lot to learn in the weapon itself, in that it's not your typical rifle. There's a lot, once you start to go past a certain range when you're shooting, there's a lot of variables that have to be learned and have to be compensated for. Okay. The likes of weather effects,
yeah,
all of this atmospheric effects have to be taken into account, and they have to be learned, they have to be studied. The course itself, then, there are a number of sniper skills that the potential sniper must learn about and must pass in order to become a qualified sniper. So there's a sniper knowledge test, which is the basic test that every sniper must pass. And it's a written test that every basic sniper, every qualified sniper must pass this. You're also tested in camouflage and concealment, which is your ability to basically, within a short amount of time, move to a firing position, which you hastily prepare. Then observers, trained observers in the form of sniper instructors, will be given time then to observe you.
And like to see if they can see you, or to obviously assessing your drills, but I suppose
assessing your drills,
if they can't see you, then you've done a good job.
If they can't see you, you've done a good job, but that's not the end of it. Then you must take a shot from your hastily prepared position. Now, blank ammunition is used during this phase of training, and if you're still not seeing after firing this shot, then one of the instructors then will move into your position and check to make sure that your weapon system is set up correctly, so that if you were actually firing a live round, you would have the correct settings on the scope, on the sight, and the rifle or the firing position that you've chosen is stable enough for you to.
And it's probably actually pointing at the thing, just in case you're like hiding behind the tree and just firing it off. So
exactly,
you can't,
exactly. You know, you have to, everything is checked, and everything is checked to make sure that if it was a live round that you were firing, that you would be on target and you would make the hit. And also then they check to make sure that you have good eyes on the observers, to make sure they can see you and you can't see them.
Yeah.
Another one of the skills then that you're tested in is the stalking skill, which the stalk is the kind of classic skill that people associate with sniping. The stalk is basically when a sniper is moving into his final stages of neutralizing or observing his target. He will move into his stalk, which means that he's moving from a point. The stalk skill in the course is tested in that you're moving from a point A to a point B, and you must get within a certain distance of trained observers, set up a firing position, take your shot, and all this time then you're being observed. It's almost like the camouflage and concealment test, only you are being observed while you're moving into your position. So they have full field of view on your approach, and you must use a high standard of field craft and movement in order to enter a firing position, prepare it, and take your shot, and then identify the observation position that the two observers that are observing for the potential snipers from.
Okay, cool, right. Mm-hmm. Well, so like, that sounds like it's such a really highly kind of specialised skill, and that there's a huge amount to it. But like, just maybe to roll back some more, but just for maybe people that don't kind of know, or kind of, because we've been talking about the concept of sniping. Like, the origins of sniping, like what kind of origin point are we talking about? Or,
well, if you want to go right back to where the origins of the military sniper came from, I mean, it could probably be traced back to the introduction of the crossbow, which is where the first kind of marksmen, I suppose, came from. Then in around the 1500s, then you had the introduction of the first kind of firearms on the battlefield. The origin of the sniper is a relatively new term, in that it's only little over 100 years old. Prior to this, they were known as sharpshooters, and this came from the Germanic Scharfschützen. So it originated in Central Europe, and a lot of it was recreational shooting, that these guys would compete in clubs, a lot of our shooters nowadays in the military, they also compete in civilian precision rifle shooting. They had Schützenfests, which were local clubs, and then in times of warfare, then they would mobilize and they would form on the battlefield as skirmishers, and they were renowned for their accuracy with these new flintlock rifles back then. I suppose then the sniping skill, or the marksman, I'll stick with the sharpshooter terminology for the moment, where it catapulted was in the US Civil War. So both sides, the Union and the Confederacy, both employed sharpshooters. particularly the use of telescopic sights started to come to the fore. And this is kind of where the sniper first, or the sharpshooter kind of first became, I suppose, the psychological aspect of the use and the psychological impact in the use of sharpshooters came to the fore, because a lot of these guys back then, they were famous, they were renowned for turning the tides of battle, in that a single shooter could now neutralize a senior commander in the form of maybe perhaps an enemy general, which has happened, which happened in the US Civil War. And then as a result of this, armies would flee the battlefield, they'd be routed, morale would crumble. And the US Civil War is kind of where the sharpshooter started to come into his own as a purpose solely employed in that role as a sharpshooter. Cool. From there then, moving forward, where the terminology sniper originated, in the late 19th century, English or British officers and soldiers in India would recreationally shoot. They were employed to India. They used to shoot recreationally as well, and they would hunt a small game bird called a snipe. If you could hit a snipe from a certain distance, they were known for their dark color.
Yeah.
They flew erratically. They were quite small.
So it was a really difficult kind of target.
Extremely difficult to hit.
Yeah.
Particularly with the types of rifles that they were using back then. If you could hit a snipe, your marksman skills were classed as extremely high.
Okay.
And then that gave way to the terminology that they would use. They would say, I'm going sniping.
Yeah.
I'm off out sniping for the day. And that meant they were going out hunting these game birds or just going out shooting in general. The first use of the military term sniper comes from the First World War as British media started to label sharpshooters as snipers. And from then, over the last 100 years particularly, the military sniper, in terms of role on the battlefield, has expanded exponentially. From the First World War, the psychological impact, the tactical use of a sniper became invaluable. Moving forward to the Second World War, the sniper almost became a celebrity on the battlefield.
You do hear a lot of stories, and there was a Tarantino film where one of the German characters had become fit.
That's
become
right,
a famous actor or
yeah,
something.
That's right,
based upon his exploits in the battlefield as a sniper.
That's right. Yeah. And I suppose that's almost happened in history. If you take the Second World War, for example, or even before the Second World War, there was a Finnish sniper in the Winter War, with Finland and Russia, Simo Haja. Probably the sniper that's been credited with the most kills in history. He became very popular. He was he became a propaganda tool or a PR tool. And moving on from that, then the Soviets during the Second World War, they employed in full units of snipers, male and female snipers. In particular, probably one of the most famous snipers of all time, Vasily Zaitsev, who was a Soviet sniper on the Eastern Front. He almost did become a movie star. His popularity, he was used more for touring the Soviet Union to garner support for the war effort.
Than actually for sniping.
Pretty much. And then from that, you had a female sniper, which was basically his equivalent, Lyudmila Pavlenchenko. She was used as a propaganda and a PR tool. And then as a result of this, expansion of the skill sector in the Second World War, then. And the use of the sniper as almost a public relations and a propaganda tool. You had other famous snipers like Carlos Hatcock, U.S. Marine Corps Master Sergeant, in the Vietnam War, who became extremely popular for his use of mounting scopes onto various different weapon systems.
Yeah.
So, and even up to the modern day, then the likes of
Chris Coyle.
I mean, he's probably the most recent kind of sniper celebrity, and his exploits have been well popularized in movies and various different forms of media. So, I mean, like the skill set itself, it's been around for about 500 years, but it's only in the last 100 years that it's really kind of come to the fore and it's expanded. And almost become some snipers there, as we spoke about celebrity status.
So I mean, that a lot of that stuff about the history of sniping, I don't know anything about a lot of it. It's really great stuff. Regard to the type of roles, obviously, like people who aren't familiar with the skill set and with its roles, I mean, the most obvious thing that when you think about a sniper is just firing a long range weapon. What kind of roles? What does a sniper provide you with? As a battlefield commander, or what kind of support can snipers provide in operations?
Yeah. Okay, well, you're right what you say. A lot of people think that a sniper is just shooting. You know, it's a sniper's primary role, I suppose, would be classed as shooting and neutralizing targets, but their secondary role is observation. Snipers in general spend probably 95 or 99% of the time carrying out their secondary role, which is observation, acting as the eyes of the battlefield commander and reporting back. The sniper operates as part of the reconnaissance section, so their job, the sniper's job, is to gather information primarily. In terms of warfighting, what a sniper can offer is obviously observation. So snipers, sniper teams, sniper sections, sniper units are trained to deploy ahead of the forward edge of your own troops or friendly troops and to gather information. More often than not, sniper teams and sniper units are sent out to gather information on enemy movements, strategic points and locations. And then obviously there are times when the sniper team can be tasked with neutralizing key enemy personnel. But in order for a sniper team to carry out this task of neutralizing or destroying enemy personnel, the information must be gathered where they are.
Yeah.
And that's where the sniper team plays into the reconnaissance unit, that the greater reconnaissance unit that a sniper team is part of, in that they help to gather that information, which leads to further operations.
Okay.
A sniper detachment or a sniper team, in terms of warfighting, again, can be used, I suppose they can give you more bang for your buck.
Yeah.
In terms of, it's a small unit deployed on the battlefield, and they can be used to hold up or disrupt the movement of enemy formations a lot bigger than their own size.
Yeah.
A sniper team, a well-motivated sniper team or detachment, could hold up a company or maybe even a battalion-sized enemy formation, due to the fact that, well, number one, I spoke about this already, you have the psychological aspect of a sniper, a well-disciplined and well-trained sniper. Firstly, you don't know where the fire, ideally, you don't know where the fire is coming from.
Yeah.
And everybody is afraid to move. And if the troops at the front are afraid to move, then it'll hold up the entire operation.
Having a knock-on effect all the way back.
It has a knock-on effect all the way back.
Yeah.
In terms of assets then that must be utilized to dislodge or to move or to destroy a sniper team, that holds up the movement then, in that a lot of armies have employed air assets in the forms of an airstrike,
yeah,
or artillery, particularly in the Second World War and the First World War. If a sniper was detected operating in a certain area, usually an artillery barrage would follow, because it's easier just to destroy an entire area or an entire building rather than
to actually find
to attempt place. To maneuver in on a sniper's position. It's
that's
safer.
As you were saying earlier, that a lot of friendly forces at the time would have disliked their friendly snipers.
That's correct.
They would,
I mean, if a sniper was operating in a trench in the First World War, a couple of meters away from some of the other guys, you know, they would dislike this, because if the opposing force detected a sniper operating in an area, an artillery barrage would follow soon after. I suppose then, when maneuver warfare came a greater element in the Second World War, the sniper was more generally accepted then by their own side, in that they offered force protection.
Yeah. We have actually spoken, so in the previous podcast, we spoke of medical force protection, or the overall concept of force protection being that they contribute to your own friendly forces not being put in danger or basically protecting friendly forces.
Yeah. I mean, it gives friendly forces that added reassurance that somebody is watching their back. And a sniper team or detachment would be deployed on what we call overwatch. And basically that's just watching your friendly forces as they're conducting their business, whether that is in terms of warfighting, whether that's advancing onto a target or neutralizing a target. The sniper team will provide overwatch just to make sure that nothing unexpected can interrupt their actions that they're carrying out. The overwatch role is something that Irish snipers carry out quite a lot overseas on peace support operations. And the sniper, obviously the sniper as a warfighter and in warfighting use, is a force multiplier. And it's an excellent system to have available, but in terms of peace support operations,
Which is something like, I suppose, people don't kind of realise. Everybody associates it with an offensive type of warfare. Yeah. But in peace support operations, there's a huge number of roles it can fulfil as well.
Oh, absolutely. In terms of peace support operations, the sniper is an invaluable asset. A sniper team can offer, obviously, overwatch, protect friendly forces if they're moving into an unknown area. A sniper team can also provide information gathering for a commander. A sniper team can also provide damage limitation. If you are operating in a peace support environment and an incident happens, the sniper team or the presence of a sniper team can often be enough to de-escalate a situation.
Yeah.
I mean, if an aggressor or if a hostile knows that he's in the scope of a sniper team or knows that a sniper team is operating in the area, more often than not, it can be enough of a deterrent to stop somebody from carrying out an act. A lot of this is kind of more prevalent in the police employment of snipers.
Yeah.
In the likes of hostage situations and things like this. If a hostage taker knows that there's a sniper team operating and that they have eyes on the individual, then it's more often than not, it's enough to de-escalate a situation. Okay. But a lot of the sniper role in the Irish Defence Forces on peace support operations has been force protection, and it's a role that I've carried out.
Yeah, you said that you actually deployed to Chad.
Yes.
As a sniper. Mm-hmm. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah. So I deployed to Chad in 2009. In January 2009, I had just completed the sniper instructor's course in the infantry weapons wing where I'm based now. And then in January of 2009, I deployed to Chad as part of a sniper team. And for the 4 months I was out there, we were employed full time as snipers. There was six of us, six sniper qualified personnel in the battalion, the 99th Infantry Battalion. And our job when we went out on patrols was to provide overwatch for our comrades as they moved into villages. It was a time of heightened tension, because there was a rebel incursion while we were there, and a lot of our time was spent in observation positions. So we would move to some kind of vantage point and deploy ourselves in the observation role, whether that was covert observation, so basically we'd remain hidden, remain out of sight, or overt observation. And then again, like the overt side of it, again, is another deterrent. If a sniper team are visible, which is what you see a lot of in police roles and then in the kind of aid to civil power role that the Irish Defence Forces undertake on Ireland, the deployment of a visible sniper teams is a deterrent as well. And it's also a reassurance for friendly forces.
Yeah, that they are someone
as part of this force protection role.
Watching over them.
Yeah, yeah. And I was part of teams that provided early warning for our camp in Chad, Camp Kira. Mm-hmm. And we would deploy in the area around the camp at the time of the heightened tension during the rebel incursions. And we'd basically act as the eyes of our commander and feedback information through our battalion operations center. And then that fed into the greater mission picture.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, you can see here the building up sniper teams and sniping as part of a much greater whole that has so many uses. Mm. But to get into sort of maybe some of the nitty-gritty as well, mm-hmm. with regard to the Irish Defence Forces, the kind of equipment that we operate.
Yeah.
Like what are the rifles that we're using, just for people at home?
Okay, so in terms of weapons that a sniper carries, a substantial amount of equipment. So if you think, for example, the classic two-man sniper team, which you very rarely operate as for sustainability, but we can talk about that a little bit later on. So a sniper, we'll start with the bottom and work our way up, I suppose. So each member of a sniper team will carry a pistol, mm-hmm. which is 9mm, plus the ammunition associated with that. In addition to this, they'll also carry our general service rifle, which is the Steyr with the x4 ACOG sight.
Yeah.
In addition to this, then, the sniper will carry his long rifle, as we call it, or the bolt-action rifle, the Accuracy International. This weapon itself, for general service, comes in two different calibers. So we have the 0.308 of an inch, which is our kind of short-range sniper rifle, short to medium-range sniper rifle. And then for the larger taskings or situations that require a bit of a longer reach, then we have the 0.338. sniper rifle, slightly heavier, a larger round, which will give you a little bit, which will give you quite a longer range, quite a longer reach, and then will allow you, because of the size of the round, which will allow you to negate some of the weather effects and some of the
what kind of range are we talking about?
You're looking at for the 0.308, which is our basic model, Accuracy International, you're looking a planning range of 800 meters. For the 0.338, you're looking at out to 1,400 meters, but you will score hits out to 1,600 meters, which is a mile. Wow. Our shooters quite regularly hit targets out to a mile down in the Glenrothmale Artillery Range.
That is
quite easy.
That's a huge distance.
Yeah. In addition to this, it's a soft weapon, a special operations force weapon, but there is also a 0.5 version or to use a popular term, a 50 caliber version of the Accuracy International, which is used by our special forces unit, the Army Ranger Wing.
Okay, right. And what kind of range does that get out to?
That will give you out over 2 kilometers.
Wow.
Yeah. And still have enough power at that range to cause a devastating effect on the target.
Yeah.
It's more, I suppose. Well, it's classed as an anti-material rifle. It's a highly effective counter sniping weapon. And counter sniping then is a skill that came out of the heavy use of snipers in the Second World War, in that there was a saying that it takes a sniper to stop a sniper. And when you have such a large caliber weapon system as the 0.5 Accuracy International, it allows you to penetrate most of the, number one, the armor that a sniper may be wearing personally on their own person, and also whatever cover they may be behind, whether it's brick walls, cinder block walls, any kind of heavy cover.
Okay, well, I wasn't aware that we had the 0.5 caliber sniper from service, so that's that's great information to have. In regard to other kind of equipment or sort of say body armor or what other kind of things would you be carrying if you were sorting into an area?
Yeah, in addition to the weapon systems and the ammunition that has to be carried for them, obviously, because if a sniper is acting the observation and the information gathering, that information has to be carried back, has to be passed back, and that's done through the use of radio communications. So the sniper team will carry radio sets and the associated batteries that go with them. In addition to this, then, they'll carry their night vision equipment, both night vision for themselves, their own personal night vision, which can be mounted on their helmets, and then night vision systems, which can be mounted onto the weapons as well. Their own personal stars and the bolt action rifle as well. And then, of course, batteries have to be carried for everything.
Yeah.
You know, it's a substantial amount of equipment. And then in addition to this, the sniper is also wearing his personal body armor and the helmet as well.
So that's an awful lot of weight to be carrying as well.
There is an awful lot of weight to be carried. And then you think in terms of sustainability, so you have batteries to sustain your equipment, to sustain the operator, to sustain the sniper themselves. You're talking food and water then must be carried on top of this, and clothing. So in terms of, you can't put an exact figure on the weight, but in terms of equipment, it's substantial. In addition, the spotter also has a dedicated spotter's rifle that they will carry to assist the sniper.
So like, having talked about all the equipment that you have to carry and your food and water and sustaining yourself, yeah. I mean, that's a huge amount of weight. So there's obviously a large kind of fitness and robustness aspect to being a sniper. I presume the course itself is quite robust as well.
It is, yeah, it is. The course itself, from a physical aspect, the course itself is very demanding. Not just the early starts and late finishes. I spoke about the navigation role of a sniper, and navigating over long distances, carrying heavy weight, does require a lot of physical fitness and mental toughness as well. If you're talking about inserting into an operation or even on an exercise here, and then you're carrying the equipment that you need to sustain that operation for however long it may be, depending on the terrain that you're going to be walking over, you're going to be maneuvering over. Yeah, I mean, physical fitness is
a big part of it.
It's paramount.
Like typical sort of a kind of distances for insertion, like as in how close to your to the point to which you're actually going to go into your hide, would you typically be in a kind of a, say, in an exercise scenario, in an operation scenario, would you be dropped off? How far would you actually have to go?
It's hard to put a figure on it, but you could say between 10 to 15 kilometers if you're going to class a typical insertion walk, and then you're carrying, like I said, it's hard to put a figure on the amount of equipment that you'd be carrying, because when you're talking weapons, ammunition, equipment, batteries, food, water, clothing, it all adds up. And there's a personal kind of aspect to the equipment that's carried as well. So each individual will carry different weights depending on what they want to carry and what they feel that they need they need to carry. But yeah, if physical fitness is extremely important, because number one, if you're not physically fit and mentally tough enough to carry the weight into the operation area, once you carry out that walk or you carry out that insertion walk, whatever distance it may be, the real work starts when you get to.
Yeah, so you have to be fit. To be fit to do the operation once you get in there.
Yeah, because I mean, if you have to prepare a position, usually by night, so if you're talking a covert position, which is a position that you must remain unseen for a period of time. So you're talking about a covert observation post, which must be prepared during darkness.
Yeah.
So you'll insert, ideally by night, reach your objective area, ideally by night, and then work through the night to prepare this position, whether it's digging down deep, or if you're lucky enough to come across a position that doesn't require much preparation, then, you know, all well and good. But 9 times out of 10, you have to work hard for a number of hours to get that position prepared and get it comfortable, because you're looking at sustainability then, which we spoke about. A sniper team or sniper detachment must be able to sustain themselves.
Yeah.
And a lot of that comes down to comfort as well. So once you've walked and you've inserted and you've worked and if you need to dig, then you've prepared your position, then your work doesn't end there. You go into the next phase of your operation, whether that's observing, which again is mentally taxing. I mean, if you're looking through glass, a spotting scope or some kind of glass, whether it's binoculars, a spotting scope or a rifle scope, that is mentally draining.
Yeah.
You know, and the physical fitness aspect, it doesn't just take in, being physically fit doesn't just allow you to walk for X amount of miles and then dig a hole in the ground. When you get there, it also allows you to remain awake, remain alert,
yeah,
to observe, to notice things, to extract information from the picture in front of you.
It's kind of the mission that you're, yeah, that you've been
exactly, and then to compile that information into ammunition, useful information for your commander, and feed that back in a timely manner in order to affect future operations, yeah, which ultimately is what a sniper's job is to do, is to gather information and then feed that back into the next phase of the operation, whatever it may be.
Okay. And like, as regards, say, once you're in there, okay, and you've dug down, you've created your position, mm-hmm, what way typically, like, do you go into routine? Do you work in shifts or what's the idea?
Yeah, well, you do work in shifts. Obviously, walk in, the work, the routine is quite taxing. But we're not robots, you know, you don't stay awake for 72 hours, 96 hours, whatever amount of time that you're in an observation position. So basically what will happen is you will have one member of the team will observe the target or observe the objective, whatever it may be. One member of the team will provide security, whether that's watching to the rear or watching for any unwanted situations that may develop in the area. Yeah. And then whoever is not needed is resting. And once you are in an observation position, and once you've set up and you're as comfortable as possible, once you settle into routine, it basically works on a rotation system of observing the target, reporting, logging information, resting, providing security, and it's just constant rotation all the way through.
This is like what you kind of mentioned earlier about how like a sniper pair just two isn't really sustainable over a long period of time. You do need a third person to manage to rotate.
Yeah.
And actually, because the security aspect of it, keeping your, because you don't want to be found out by
the
opposing forces walking around the area.
Exactly, and that's why it's of paramount importance that while you're working through the night to prepare this position, that you don't leave any kind of sign, so that when it does become daytime, if you leave a nice little trail going into your position, or you don't properly camouflage the outside of your position, then you know, you've wasted your time, because you're sticking out like a sore thumb on a natural background or whatever it may be. A two-man or two-person sniper team is perfect for quick operations. You know, insert into an area, carry out a task, and withdraw. When you're looking at anything over kind of 24 hours, going into 72 hours, or 48, 72, and 96 hours, you're looking at a minimum of 4 in order to rotate and make sure that everybody gets adequate sleep. But I mean, a sniper team or detachment then can band into a section on the ground, and you can have any number of sniper teams, whether that's 4-man or a full section, operating in support of each other, providing mutual support, ensuring that your personnel are sustained through rest, and also food and water runs out over time. So you're limited in that we have to rest, and you're limited in the food and water that you can carry, and batteries also. So for long-term operations, you're talking about resupply. It becomes more complicated then.
Yeah, of course.
You're talking of leaving your position in order to be resupplied to move back in.
So as regards, say, timing, we're kind of talking about a maximum of...
I'd say 72 to 96 hours without resupply. 72.
And of course, if you're resupplying, then you're running the risk of the position being seen or...
Yeah, to be resupplied, you're running the risk of being compromised in that you must leave your position in order to pick up your resupply. Depending on the tactical situation, a resupply can be dropped close by. If the tactical situation doesn't allow, or the situation, the greater picture, the situation on the ground doesn't allow, then you're going to have to move a greater distance to carry your resupply, which again leads to more exertion. It doesn't work well for sustainability.
Okay. With regard to kind of Irish snipers on the international stage, in a kind of we participate in a number of international type of competitions, and we run our own.
We do.
Can you give us a bit of a breakdown on that? Like, because we spoke a bit about the skills earlier. Mm-hmm. What kind of skills in an international sniping competition are tested, and like, how are they tested? How do you decide?
Yeah.
Aside from the shooting aspect of it, but who is the best sniper team?
Yeah, okay. So a number of years ago, the Irish Defence Forces started running all-army sniper competitions. And then from there, that expanded into international sniper competitions. Very similar to what our partners in the US Army and various other different armies run international competitions. So what happens in the international competition is we invite foreign partners, US, to name a few of them. We invite the US, British, German, Belgian, Dutch, and Canadian forces, to name a few. There are others. The competition is run over 2 weeks. Basically, the first week is a concentration week. What happens is this is kind of the one time of the year that allows the sniper community in the Defence Forces to come together. The sniper community itself, a fairly tight-knit community in the organisation of like-minded individuals. I suppose I'll just touch on this. The sniper skill set itself is something that, it's not something that you undertake, or it's not a path that you follow order for, you know, career advancement. It's very much a kind of a calling, I suppose.
It's not an easy course. It's not easy. For everybody. Like.
It's not easy. And I mean, if you think in terms of the promotion aspects of becoming a sniper, for example, in a standard Irish infantry battalion, there is one sniper sergeant appointment. So it's not a course that you would go and or complete in order to open up doorways for promotion.
Yeah,
it's something that it's a skill set that draws soldiers that are motivated, that want to basically make themselves better and advance themselves and want to become part of this community.
In their soldiering skills,
yeah, they want to advance their soldiering skills. So the concentration week, we all come together as a group, and we train together and we learn off of each other. It's very much an open kind of workshop based week where anybody can bring anything to the table. I mean, like I said, we have a lot of shooters. In fact, our top shooter in the country competes regularly in civilian precision rifle shooting, and there's a lot of stuff going on out there in the civilian shooting that we can learn from. I mean, some of the top shooters in the world are ex-military, now civilian competitors, and our guys then, this has happened for the last 500 years, that the sharp shooting skills have come from shooting competitions outside and then were brought into the military.
People enjoy the skill aspect of
absolutely, and skills that people have learned in civilian competitions have translated into military applications, whether that's through competitions, or through the application of these skills on the battlefield in war fighting and peace support operations. So after the first week then, and our foreign colleagues are invited to this first week, and they can come along and they can throw in anything they want. They're free to, it's an open forum. In the infantry weapons wing, my unit, we facilitate the running of this.
Yeah.
We know that the knowledge is out there in the units, the shooters that are carrying out these tasks all the time, and we facilitate the running of this. Now, the second week is very much the competition. So we run that in the Glen of Amal, and last year we had 24 teams. Obviously, we had the Irish Defence Forces teams from various different units, and we had foreign teams from the British Armed Forces, we had US shooters, we had Dutch Marine Commandos, our Canadian, unfortunately Canadian, there was a number of Canadian teams lined up to travel, but unfortunately due to a natural disaster in the form of flooding over there, they couldn't travel at the last minute. So it was a highly successful week, which ultimately was won out by an Irish team from the 6th Infantry Battalion.
I remember that. We got some great PR branch, we got some great images of it, and it looks like it. What kind of events are we talking about?
So obviously we spoke about the physical aspect of sniping and the high standard of physical fitness and robustness that's required of snipers. So from the get-go, the physical aspect is there, and that adds to the stress element. So every shoot or every event of the concentration will involve some kind of physical element to add that little bit of stress to kind of turn the screw on the shooters as they're operating. You're looking at the skills that are tested. So there's long range shooting, various different positions, navigation is tested. In addition to this, then shooting from unstable platforms. So you think of the classic sniper lying prone on the ground in a nice comfortable position, which they can sustain for a couple of hours.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen. It very, very rarely happens unless you're on a gallery range, which is a set range, and then you're firing at paper targets. In a battle scenario or in a combat kind of situation, which is what we try and simulate in the competition,
yeah,
snipers are shooting from various different positions, whether that's standing, kneeling, seating, from vehicles, from all different types of unstable platforms, very uncomfortable positions. So that adds the stress element into it as well, and also adds the physical aspect of it as well, because physical fitness doesn't just entail moving from A to B at speed or carrying weight. It's also, you may be able to move into a position, or you may be able to lie in a position or adopt an unorthodox shooting position.
Yeah, yeah.
The various different weapon systems are tested then as well. So you have the classic bolt action rifle, which is tested. The spotter's rifles are tested as well. The spotter themselves are tested separately to the sniper. So we have a scoring system for, in the sniper team, the sniper and the spotter will be scored separately.
Yeah, I've seen that there's an award for best sniper, but there's also an award for best spotter, isn't it? Yeah. And then best overall team as well.
Best overall team. And then in addition to this, then the backup weapon in the form of your sidearm or your pistol is tested as well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's
fairly comprehensive.
Like, it is. And the time that we have to run it, we try and fit everything in over the course of the week. And it does work quite well. It's an intense week for the teams, and it does work quite well. And it has worked quite well in the past. We usually get good feedback. We have always gotten good feedback from our foreign colleagues. And then the winners, I suppose, the coveted, there are prizes. We do have prizes for the winners. But the most coveted prize is foreign travel for our own highest placing Irish teams. So the first and second teams get to travel to the United States to compete in their international sniper competition in Fort Benning in Georgia. And the next team then get to compete in Canada in their international sniper competition.
Whoa.
So, I mean, that's aside from all the prizes that we do have, and we do get pretty good prizes for the shooters and for the competitors, the most highly coveted prize is that chance to travel. And unfortunately, due to the current situation,
with COVID-19 outbreak, for those of you at home, this has obviously been recorded during COVID-19.
Mm. Our current top team didn't get to travel, which would have been last month, to Fort Benning. But thankfully, we have word that the competition has just been postponed, not cancelled. So we're hoping that the team will get to compete at a later date.
Hopefully we'll do very well. So, like, having spoken about, like, the international cycling competitions, I mean, there seems to be a really vibrant community out there, and the concentration week you have with other foreign militaries as well. Yeah. And I mean, it seems like I said, really vibrant. With regards to sort of the future of sniping in both the Defence Forces and, say, outside, what are there any major developments coming down the line, or what are the current trends in sniping?
Yeah, there's a lot actually going on there now at the moment. In my unit, the weapons wing, I'm lucky to be part of a team of four NCO instructors. So, and
non-commissioned officers for any of our listeners who wouldn't know.
Yeah, and a captain, an officer, a sniper, and we're just constantly involved in planning. I mean, we've just recently taken delivery of the new sniper clothing. So the sniper skill set is one of the few kind of infantry skills that has task specific clothing. You know, we've just taken delivery of new sets of that, so that'll be rolled out across the organisation, which will allow us to carry out our jobs a little bit more effectively. In addition to this, we have the procurement of new spotters rifles coming on, the new sniper support weapon.
Yeah.
So this will be the spotters rifle. This will kind of assist the sniper in their taskings, and we'll add a little bit more firepower to the sniper team. As part of this then, coming out of the sniper support rifle is a designated marksman's rifle. So this will be brought into all infantry sections across the organisation, and it will bridge the gap between our standard service rifle and our light machine gun, which operates at section level on the field. And it will give commanders, small level commanders, an added observation capability, and will also allow you precision fire and a little bit more firepower than what our general service rifle carries, but not the maximum damage that the general purpose machine gun or our light machine gun will.
Of course. Yeah. And so accuracy.
Yeah, this is something that will be rolling out across the entire organization. And then moving forward, then there is any number of sniper equipment coming online in the form of new tripods. We've taken delivery of new backpacks, new sniper-specific backpacks, which allow us to carry the weapon system on our backs. Because a sniper doesn't carry his sniper rifle as his primary weapon system.
If he's walking.
When you're moving around. Yeah. The sniper carries our general service rifle, but the sniper rifle is only removed from its backpack when it's going into its task, or when the sniper is moving into the stalk phase, I suppose, of the operation. Yeah, so I mean, it's constantly changing. The sniper clothing has been an ongoing process for the last number of years. Every couple of years, it's replaced and it's renewed and it's sent out. And then we're looking down the line at new shooting platforms. Our sniper officer is currently looking at developing a couple of shooting platforms, which is going to increase our range capabilities. And the team in the weapons wing is just constantly working. We're looking at new night vision systems for our weapons as well. So it's a constant ongoing process.
Well, constant development.
Constant development. We're also looking at changing the syllabus for some of the courses as well. And yeah, that's going to be something that we'll be looking at over the next couple of months.
Well, constant improving.
Yeah, constant.
Well, that brings us to the end of this week's episode. Thanks very much for coming on to us, Carl.
Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
A very, very interesting podcast. I'm sure there's a lot of information on that that people wouldn't have heard before. Yeah. For our listeners out there, please keep an eye on Defence Forces social media platforms and military.ie for further content on the Irish Defence Forces. And for our serving members, please check out the members area of military.ie. Today's programme was produced by Gunnar Pádraic Sullivan and Sergeant Paul Keeley of the Defence Forces Audiovisual School. And to everyone out there, thanks very much for listening. We'll be back with another episode soon. Stay safe.